Honesty is the best policy. I'm Joseph. This is Input English. Today I have a discussion that will develop from that phrase that I began with. Honesty is the best policy. That's a phrase in English that has been used for perhaps centuries. It's a very old phrase. It's an old saying. One of the reasons that it has caught on and stayed in the English language in active use is the rhyme. You will notice that the word honesty and the word policy end with the same sound. That's a rhyme, and since they rhyme, it's easy for people to remember that phrase. Rhyming has been used as a memory aid when people are trying to learn stories and songs. It's helpful. We are often told that honesty is the best policy, and I believe that it is. However, I'm in a very specific situation. I'm creating content for Comprehensible Input, and I am posting it online on YouTube. That is, I'm putting out this information to the public. So there are things that I probably should not disclose to the public. For instance, my telephone number. I should not disclose my address. There's a lot of personal information that we should not give out. If your personal information is disclosed publicly, you can say that you have been doxxed. That is a modern day term of art for disclosing private information. So in that context, I wouldn't want to dox myself and give out a lot of personal information. I want to keep some information close to the vest. So what's that term, close to the vest? You might notice that I'm dressed differently today. I'm wearing a vest. Vests perhaps are coming back into fashion these days. Perhaps not. They were somewhat popular when I was younger. I had some suits that I wore that had a vest as part of the suit. But in the 1800s, vests were very common. In the early 1800s in the United States, we were seeing the results of the developing Industrial Revolution. One of the things we saw was steam-powered riverboats. In the 1800s, before the American Civil War, we saw the development of a lot of riverboat traffic up and down the Mississippi River. These riverboats carried passengers, but they also carried a lot of cargo. It was important for commerce. The riverboats were propelled by steam engines, and they were not fast. They were very slow. So picture yourself as a passenger traveling on the Mississippi River. Your progress is very slow. You would rightly conclude that this is going to be a very long trip. So these folks on these riverboats needed to entertain themselves. One of the things they did was play cards. A lot of people on the Mississippi riverboats played cards, and they frequently gambled. That is, they wagered money on those card games. When they played cards, they used one of these. This is a deck of cards. There are 52 cards. There are four suits. 25% of the cards display a heart. 25% of the cards display what we call clubs, that looks a little bit like a shamrock. 25% of the cards show this emblem, which we call spades. And then 25% of the cards show a diamond. Those are the four suits of a standard deck of cards, and they total 52. Each suit has 13 cards. One of the most popular games on these riverboats, particularly if they were gambling, is poker. When they played poker, one of the players was the dealer, and they would deal cards out to the other players face down, so no one knew what these cards were. It was a secret. It's part of the game. They might deal 5 cards to each player. They might deal 7 cards to each player. When they start the game, the players agree on which variation of poker they're playing. 5 card draw, 5 card stud, 7 card stud. There are many variations of poker. Where did we get poker anyway? Well, I am told, so the story goes, that it was adapted from a French game called poker, and they're very similar. I'm not an expert on that. There is also some belief that both poker and poker are related to an old Persian card game. Apparently, this Persian card game is fairly similar. When someone is playing poker and they have been dealt their cards, they get this. They get their hand. Today, I'm showing 5 cards. I have 5 different cards, and I can see the faces of the cards. But you can't. Part of the game is concealing your cards from your players, and they will conceal their cards. So if I want to hold my hand, that is, hold the cards I was given, in a way that no one can see them, I might hold them close to my vest. Well, people talked about that. And that phrase became part of the English language. If you keep something close to the vest, or you play it close to the vest, you are concealing the privileged information, the private information that you don't want others to know. So if I take that to the YouTube situation where I am, there are things like my street address that I am playing close to the vest. Now you know why I'm wearing a vest today. There are some other phrases in common everyday English that we get from those card games that were played on the Mississippi River on riverboats. Now, this behavior of playing cards and gambling didn't stop with the riverboats. Over time, it spread to the American West. And one of the cliches in cowboy movies and Western television shows would be card games, playing poker, gambling. Now, I don't advocate gambling. I don't gamble. I have no interest in it. I also have no experience with it. I played poker, perhaps in college or high school, but we never played for money. We just played to see who was going to win. We were not gambling. We were playing cards. If you're not gambling and you're just playing cards, you still might play it close to the vest. There are a couple other phrases that come out of this activity. One of them is tipping your hand. Let's say I'm holding my cards here like this, and then I get distracted and I tilt my hand down like this, and you can see my cards. I have tipped my hand down, and that puts me at a terrible disadvantage because the other players in this card game now know the values of my cards. So again, this phrase got picked up in English. If someone tips their hand, they inadvertently, accidentally give out information that puts them at a disadvantage. So how could that happen in the day-to-day? Let's say a couple wants to buy a house. They go and look at the house, and they are very taken by the house. They love it. They are fantasizing about raising their family in this house. It has all the features and it has opportunities for them to really make a fine home. And they are talking between the two of them about their feelings for this house. But they were not careful and they were easily overheard by the real estate agent that represented the seller. So now the seller, through his agent, knows that this couple is willing to pay a lot more money because they're so taken by the house. They really want it. And you could infer that they're willing to pay more. You could say that that couple, by speaking about their feelings for this house, has tipped their hand. They disclosed too much and they did it accidentally. The third phrase that came out of playing poker on riverboats and in the American West is putting your cards on the table. If you lay your cards on the table, you do that on purpose. That's not done by accident. You lay your cards on the table and the face value of those cards is visible to all. People put their cards on the table to bring the game to an end. In other words, the person putting their cards down like that believes that they are about to win the game. No sense worrying about it any longer. They are putting their cards down and proclaiming that they have won. They are challenging the other players to show that they have better cards that can beat that hand. In daily usage, if you put your cards on the table, you are disclosing information that is intended to foster honesty in your dealings and perhaps close a deal. When you put your cards on the table, it's not done by mistake. It's done on purpose, and it's an honest move. If you tell someone you're putting your cards on the table, you are telling them that you are being honest with them. When I started this YouTube channel, I knew that I did not want to disclose too much private information, but at the same time, honesty is the best policy. In other words, I didn't want to be a phony. Now, if you look at the internet and you scrutinize the content that is being published on the internet, occasionally you run across someone that you suspect is not being honest. You suspect that they are a phony. They are representing themselves as something that they are not. And I don't want to be a phony. Ever since childhood, I put value in honesty. And that was an influence from my parents. And it was something I taught my kids as they were growing up, honesty being the best policy. Over time, over the past nearly 2 years, things have changed. And I'm now at a crossroads where I need to be honest with you, the viewers. According to the statistics, at the time of this recording, 11,400 people around the world have subscribed to this channel, and the growth continues. So there are literally thousands of people who watch this channel as subscribers, and even more who watch it from time to time, but who have not yet subscribed. There are a lot of people watching these videos, and I want to be honest. There is one thing that I should disclose, I feel I need to disclose, and that's why I'm making this video today, in the name of honesty, and so the content I create makes sense. In many of my previous videos, I have referred to my wife. She and I met at UCLA, and we have been together for decades. What I did not disclose when I started this channel and up until today is that many years ago, long before I started this channel, my wife developed a severe illness. She received excellent care, But unfortunately, the disease claimed her life. She passed away a number of months ago. So, using proper English, I am now a widower. If a woman loses her husband, then she is a widow. If a husband loses his wife, he is a widower. So I am a widower. I don't disclose this to try to garner sympathy. I just want to be consistent and honest because as I make videos in the future, I will be referring to her, if I mention her, as my late wife. Now, in English, there is a distinction that's important. If someone separates from their spouse, or if they divorce their spouse, then they would refer to that spouse they left as their ex, their ex-wife or ex-husband. But by saying ex, that does not refer to a spouse who has passed away. In that case, you would say my late wife or her late husband. Late wife and late husband are the standard way that we refer to a spouse who has died. Some viewers might have noticed that as I made my videos, when I traveled and explored new places, I was always alone. The reality is I was alone because my wife could not travel and could not participate in making YouTube videos. I thought long and hard about making this video. When you think long and hard, that is a phrase that we use in American English to refer to much consideration, much conscientious thought, much care in choosing what to do. So I thought long and hard about making this video. I decided that honesty was the best policy, and so I should disclose this. One of the most common questions you get asked after the death of a spouse is, how are you doing? People you know or people that you meet are honestly interested in your well-being, so they frequently ask, how are you doing? Well, the answer to that is, I'm doing rather well, actually. I'm following advice that is often given to people who sustain such a loss. What is that advice? Do not isolate. Do not try to solve the problem with mind-altering substances. I don't drink alcohol, for instance. Do not allow oneself to constantly be overwhelmed by grief. Do not neglect one's nutrition and health. So, in order to follow that, I eat a balanced diet, a whole food, plant-based eating plan. I don't skip a lot of meals. I pay a lot of attention to good nutrition. I exercise regularly. In a previous video, I talked about hiking. A lot of the hiking I do is with other hikers, so that adds a social dimension to the hiking endeavor. I recently talked to my primary care doctor, and we drew some labs to make sure that I was on top of those things that might need to be dealt with. Everything's fine there. So I'm taking the standard advice, and I think I'm adapting rather well. Of course, there's sadness, but one can adapt and move forward. I would like to end on a positive note here, and that is with a heartfelt thank you to the people who watch these videos, subscribe to the channel, and leave comments. Because without knowing it, you helped me in my recovery process after this loss. Having this channel gave me a great sense of purpose each day. I knew what I was going to do, and I knew I was looking forward to making a video, uploading a video, reviewing the comments, answering the comments. So now I can tell you, the viewership, that you have helped me a great deal. I have great gratitude for what people did to help me. I invite comments below. And if you like videos for comprehensible input to improve your English, be sure to click on this one next. See you soon.